But we do have what I feel is a very special little speaker here this evening. It's somebody we all love, and she claims that it's hard for her to come up with what she wants to talk about, but I don't believe her. It just kind of rolls right out. Her thoughts just roll right out, and I think her little talks that she gives us are wonderful, and I look forward to the one that we get to share in this evening, and that's by our Katie, our little Katie.
I'm wired for sound, so give me a minute. That's right. I will be. I will be. Maybe.
She said that she had borrowed this out of the hospital. That's why she only had one child. You have more than one child. You learn how to
talk. Oh, it's like a bye.
Yeah.
It slices. It dices.
Yeah.
Hey, an alternate career. Good evening. You know what? The antiperspirant ads really do lie. There is no such thing as sure and dry, and I'll just have to live through that part of the talk. Tonight's talk is in some ways a continuation of the other talks I've given at the forum, and I will try not to refer back to them because many of you haven't been there for those. But I have a habit of talking about difficult questions because I use some of my time in this church to try to decide and understand what I mean when I say I believe in God. And there are things that are very clear about that belief, and there are things that only become clear over time. Tonight we're going to be looking at a book that's been published for about 25 years. It's called When Bad Things Happen to Good People, written by Rabbi Harold Kushner in about 1981. And it's a terribly important book. It is not an easy book. This is not an easy talk. But since when is that new? Rabbi Kushner wrote it after he'd been a rabbi for a while, when his three-year-old son was diagnosed with a rare genetic disorder that caused him to age prematurely. This disorder is called progeria. It is genetic in nature. And rather than being able to look forward to his son growing and thriving and developing and growing up to work and marry and have a family of his own, he and his family could look forward to his son never growing taller than 3 feet tall, having no hair on his body or his head, looking like a little old man while he was still a young child, and coming to die in his early teens. And this man had been a rabbi, had been in the job of helping people hope and believe in God all of his life. And he had to find a way to make that make sense in the face of this horrible, horrible disaster. Now, the disasters in my life, fortunately, thank you, are not as bad as Rabbi Kushner's. But his honest and careful and thorough explanation of how he continued to believe in God when painful, difficult, undeserved things happened in his life really rings bells for me in my own faith journey. And I thought, on the off chance that anyone in this room has ever suffered a bad thing that they don't think they deserved, or maybe that they do believe they deserved, but they still don't know how to reconcile with a belief in a loving, just, kind God, I thought I'd share the book with you. It's been important for me. So thank you ahead of time for giving me this chance to talk. I really don't sit calm most of the time and think great thoughts. But when I know I'm going to be talking, it gives me a chance. It gives me a chance to wonder what would help me if somebody delivered a talk on. You know, sometimes you guys come up and share your stories with me, and there's something there that really stands out for me. And I try to do the same for you, to take the pieces that have made light on my path and share them with you in case somebody needs something that's been helpful to me. Rabbi Kushner says he wrote this book as a rabbi and a person who believes in God and the goodness of the world, as someone who spent most of his life trying to help others believe and was compelled by a personal tragedy to rethink everything he had been taught about God and God's ways. The unfairness, the impossible wrongness of the illness and loss of his son forced Rabbi Kushner to examine the very core of his belief in God. He's a professional believer in God. By that I mean he's a clergy person. What happens when you make your living believing in God and then something happens to change how you understand the very nature of the universe. Maybe you write a book and make sense of it for the rest of us. This book, Examining His Journey, has been immeasurably important in my own life. For those of you who haven't heard the previous talks, I don't have terrible tragedies, but I have a long history of physical illness. I've had some very serious losses in my own life, and I've had an ongoing struggle with serious clinical depression. Those are all things that I can't say thank you to a God for. I've had to find a way to live a good life and a believing life around them. And so other people who want to talk about the difficult ways that we believe in God, how we can continue to do that in the face of tragedy or difficulty, have my attention. This is not a conversation about an easy God. I would rather my God be all-powerful, all-benevolent, all-merciful, and all-fair. I would settle for that in a heartbeat. Once again, my own life path has asked me to step up to the plate and come to a faith that accounts for life the way I've had to live it. It is not a God who treats all people nicely. Children develop leukemia. People are hit by drunk drivers. Janie is struggling with her platelet count. Make that make sense. We'll get to the reasons later in the talk why most of us, or how most of us explain that happening to ourselves. But the fact that most of us ask why, I think, is a good starting place. Another earlier talk has led me to talk about my sense that our belief in God goes through a series of stages. That's my phone. I forgot to turn it off. My apologies. I'll just ignore it. Oh, brother. God calling? Okay, try and concentrate. My mother. Okay. That there's a series of stages that our belief in God unfolds through, and that they parallel the stages of relationship that we go through as people. The very first of those stages parallels infancy, where we are totally dependent on other human beings and on God. And we don't even know that anybody else exists. We simply depend to have our needs met, and they are graciously met. Later is a stage where we come to believe we can influence how well our needs are met by how obedient we are. If we're just good enough and nice enough and sweet enough, then we'll get what we want. How many people can recognize in their own faith journey a stage that looks something like that? Anybody else? If we just do the right thing, then God will take good care of us? How's it working? Yeah, right, exactly. It works until it doesn't work. And then how do we make sense of it? How do we make sense of having been as obedient and righteous and good as we possibly could and still having painful, difficult things happen? I would bet that that's why many of us are in this church, is that we came with a loss or something that was too big and too painful for us, and it drove us out of our own understandings and into a willingness to try to understand God in a larger sense. So I've discovered some wonderful things in my journey to faith so far. One is that for whatever reason, I really do have a belief in God, and that it brings me enormous comfort and joy. I'll get back to you, Mom. And that I don't want to lose that. And in order not to lose that, I have to make sense of God sometimes. The other part of my journey, and I've talked about this at great length here because you guys are my community, is that my faith journey has taught me how badly I need a community of believers to worship with, to ask questions with, to play with and enjoy with and sob with. And you guys have been that for me, and I am enormously grateful. Talking up here is one of the few things I can do to try to get something back again. Those are the good things I've discovered in my journey. One of the painful things I've discovered is that no matter how hard I want to make something so, that doesn't necessarily make it so. Doesn't that sound perfectly obvious? I'm an adult. I should have that figured out by now. Some of those things I do have figured out. Somewhere about the age of 4, I figured out that I wanted to fly. I tried flying. It didn't work. I could give up the belief that I could fly relatively painlessly. That wasn't a hard one. How about one more of us can relate to? How about adulthood, where many of us have tried to be in a love relationship that hasn't worked out and have had to, through trial and error, come to the conclusion that some relationships just aren't meant to be. And we've come to find a way, however painful, to give those up. If we're healthy. If we're not healthy, we hang on to them. I can be 10 years in psychotherapy right there. That's still a more possible loss. I can give that up a little bit more easily. But what about when we find a place that challenges our very belief in reality itself, what we understand the nature of reality to be, that God is all-powerful, all-just, all-kind, and all-giving. That is the God I grew up with. Maybe it wasn't demonstrated, but it's the one I wanted to believe in. That, for me, is a variation on the Santa Claus God, that just because I want it, it will be forthcoming. That was a child's faith. It was a good starting place. It was a necessary starting place. But it's not a good place for me to live in adulthood. I'm really clear that I'm talking about my journey tonight. If it doesn't match your journey, you don't have to touch this. Please, take what works and leave the rest of it. I don't want to take anything away from somebody unnecessarily. I wouldn't do that. I don't like it when people do that with me. But I've had to give up some of what my earlier faith was based on pain that isn't accounted for in that earlier model. The God of my understanding is not a very good Santa Claus God. We'll look at Rabbi Krishner's understanding of why that is. But I'm giving you my background, why I picked this book off the shelf instead of another one tonight. This one explains what actually happened in a way I can live with. That helps me have the courage to get up in the morning and do it again. That matters. I'm back to the eyeglass problem. If I have them on, I can see you guys. If I take them off, I can see my nose. So I'm going to go back and forth. Krishner says of himself and his own journey, like most people, my wife and I had grown up with an image of God as an all-wise, all-powerful parent figure who would treat us as our earthly parents did, or maybe even better. If we were obedient and deserving, he would reward us. He would protect us and would see to it that we got what we deserved in life. When his son Aaron's diagnosis was delivered and its implications understood, it contradicted everything he had been taught. He could only repeat over and over what many of us who've experienced trauma find ourselves saying, this can't be happening. It is not how the world is supposed to be. He says of himself, I am fundamentally a religious man who has been hurt by life, and I wanted to write a book that could be given to the person who has also been hurt by life, by death, by illness or injury, by rejection or disappointment, and who knows in his heart that if there is justice in the world, he deserves better. What can God mean to such a person? Where can he turn for strength and hope? If you, like me, are such a person, if you want to believe in God's goodness and fairness, but find it hard because of the things that have happened to you and to people you care about, and if this book helps you do that, then I will have succeeded in distilling some blessing out of Aaron's pain and tears. Aaron died 2 days after his 14th birthday. Kushner says this is his book because any attempt to make sense of the world's pain and evil will be judged a success or a failure based on whether it offers an acceptable explanation of why he and we had to undergo what we did. And it is his book in another sense as well, because his life made it possible, and because his death made it necessary. The central book question this book asks, and the one it says is central to all of us, is indeed the title of the book, Why Do Bad Things Happen to Good People? We wonder at this question in our lives, in the lives of people we love, and while reading the newspaper. But when the question of believing in God comes up, this question for me is no longer an optional question, but an essential one. Does God allow suffering? Does he design it? Does he send it? Does he overlook it? I don't know about your faith, but those matter to me, those questions. Why are these things happening? And what can we do about them? Do we deserve what's happening to us? That's some people's theology. Painful things happen to us because we did something wrong enough to deserve it. I have troubles with lots of the traditional explanations for pain, and I was very glad in reading this book to find out that Krishner has trouble with them as well. Excluded from this talk tonight will be the Buddhist concept of karma. not because it's not right. I simply don't know enough about it to know if it's helpful or not. By karma, I mean the explanation that we suffer in this lifetime for the misdeeds of a past life. That may very well explain it. I just don't have the data, and it's not a helpful way of explaining my pain to me. So maybe somebody who knows something more about it or to whom it's a helpful comment or concept will present on that. Also, this talk, as usual, breaks some rules. We can have an unspoken rule in churches and communities that we only talk about the comfortable things. You'll have noticed by now that I don't do very well with that rule. I need to talk about the things that hurt, because sometimes that's the only way I can make sense of them. And church and my belief in God are one of the places I go to make sense of painful, difficult happenings in my life. If I'm quiet and nice, I don't give you the chance to know me, and I don't get the chance to know you, because you'll be bound by the same rules of only being allowed to talk about the things that work in your life. I would hope that as a church community, we're brave enough to be there for each other in our suffering and our struggle. And sometimes the only way to do that is to open up about them. Once again, in this community, I have learned that love is real, joy is real, miracles are real, and so is pain. Bad things do happen. We don't know why they happen. Sometimes we can say that we've earned them, and that eases our pain a little bit. If I'm a two-pack-a-day smoker and I get lung cancer, there might be a logical connection. But if my beloved child develops a fatal illness, how do I explain that? If someone as kind and loving as Janie struggles to feel it all okay, how do I explain that? Sometimes we can't. So Kushner went and surveyed the ways we explain suffering, and he came up with some of the most common ones. Common reason number one, we deserve what we get. That sounds harsh, but you'd be surprised how many of us are sort of addicted to this line of thinking. We like to believe in an orderly universe. It makes us feel much safer that if we're good, we'll get a good result. If we're bad, and we never really mean ourselves, we mean if somebody else is bad, then they're going to get what they deserve. We like that because it's comfortable and it's safe. We think that as long as we behave well, we can avoid having bad things happen. How's it working in your life? I keep hoping, but it's not working, so maybe I better find an alternate explanation that works better, besides we deserve what we get. How about this one? God has his reasons. Helpful? I mean, it might be true, but it doesn't help me understand. It doesn't help me feel strong enough to make it through the day. It does not help me love a God who is so remote as to be impossible to understand. It's not a helpful reason. How about the one we hear from some people in terrible pain and distress? There is no God. I've seen people who've been so hurt by life that it's easier to give up belief in God, in connection, in hope, in love, than it is to hold on and continue to believe. I don't like that as an explanation either. How about this one? Suffering is good for us. It teaches us something that we need to know. This might be true some of the time. You know, sometimes suffering teaches us to be kinder to other people or teaches us to change a pathway. But I don't want anything to do with a God who assigns suffering as a way of teaching. That to me isn't a God, that's a torturer. I don't voluntarily enter into relationships with torturers. And most of us haven't done anything wrong enough to merit the suffering that we're experiencing anyway. It seems out of proportion to the crime. How many of you have had a terrible tragedy and had someone say to you, God never gives us more than we can handle? It brings out a violent reaction in me. And I guess part of that reaction is because I've seen people broken by pain. I've seen people whose lives, whose marriages, whose hope has been crumbled by experiencing pain. I don't happen to believe that God never gives us more than we can handle. and anybody who uses that to calm or comfort me is missing the boat. And the last common one that we hear a lot of sometimes in churches is, it'll all be better in the afterlife. Again, that might be the case, but what help is that now? We don't know much about what the afterlife is like. Most of us in this church know there is one, but that's not a lot of help when I have to get through today. My job is to be alive now and to find a way to do that with heart and soul. And hearing that it's all going to be better some other time when I'm all done with now, that's not help. Thanks anyway. All these responses to tragedy so far have at least one thing in common. They all assume that God is the cause of the suffering, and they try to understand why God would want us to suffer. Is it for our own good? Is it a punishment we deserve? Or could it be that God does not care what happens to us? He comes up with a pivotal change. There may be another approach. Maybe God does not cause our suffering. Maybe it happens for some other reason than the will of God. This gets onto scary theological ground. Like I said, I like my God to be omnipotent, fully powerful. That means that God's responsible for everything that happens. We've just said here that maybe the explanation is that God didn't make it happen. So how do we understand a world in which suffering can exist that God doesn't make happen? Does that blow anybody else's circuit breaker? Doesn't make sense to me, so I had to look more carefully at it. Kushner argues that we, as humans, have some wonderful benefits and some terrible vulnerabilities. You and I have bodies that know how to renew themselves. We eat, we take in food, our bodies break it down and make of it what they need. We grow, we breathe, we excrete. When my 7-year-old falls down and scrapes her knee, I'm pretty confident that by next week she'll have a scab or a scar and a healed knee. My body can fix itself. That's a miracle. It's a lovely, redemptive process. There's a downside to that very same miracle. My body's cells know how to replicate themselves. That's how we have new skin for a skinned knee. What happens when that very same process goes haywire sometimes? And we get the replication of cancer. Maybe, Kushner argues, it's not possible to be human as we're human without the vulnerabilities as well as the miracles. I used to work with people who had chronic pain. They wake up every day of their lives in terrible pain, and they can plan on waking up tomorrow in pain as well. These kinds of questions are very real for people who have to wake up in them every day of their lives. Many of them had spinal injuries. And we looked at what it is to have a spine. It lets us walk. It lets us bend and move and reach. It's a miracle. However, embedded in that same miracle is a vulnerability. If you and I walk up a ladder or fall down some stairs, Charlotte, that very same treasured spine can break or be injured and harmed. It's the first time that I've looked at what it is to be human, that there are some wonderful things about being able to dance and swim and walk and move. But there are some prices to pay for that. In order to be able to move, my spine is lightweight enough that it can also be injured. If I fall, it can be broken. For me to have an injury-proof spine, it would be so thick and so heavy that I would not be able to walk. Is that the choice we'd make in order to be safe from the vulnerabilities of injury? Kushner's point is that the universe that we live in is designed according to some natural rules, and that those natural rules apply to all of us, all of the time. Gravity applies. We do fall. Cancer can apply because there's randomness. Cells repeating themselves don't always get the job just exactly right, but not because some God designed it as teaching or punishment, simply because we live in a universe in which randomness can apply. That's the physical part of living in the universe. Then there's the moral part. We're free to love. We're free to learn and know and grow and share and laugh together. We're free to make extremely good use of this existence. Downside, we're also free to make bad use of it. This universe in which we live as humans gives us the opportunity to be Mother Teresa or Millie or Adolf Hitler. Those are both options, and God hasn't taken away the freedom to move in a physical body or to make moral choices. We live in a not perfectly, tightly determined universe. And because of that, sometimes bad things can happen. I don't know about you guys, but I find that description of why bad things happen a whole lot less toxic. Because it means somebody isn't sitting there deciding to deliver me into disease, or pain, or despair. It's a little scary, because it means I can't just reach out to God to be removed from those same conditions. I can't just ask extra nicely. I can love, I can hope, I can work, but I can't make this happen, and maybe neither can God. That may not be a radically different view for me, but that, for you, for me, it's radically different. I come from a universe where God was responsible for everything, and I'm having to give up that picture. Why would we believe in a God at all if God isn't super powerful? Maybe because God inspires communities like this one to exist, where we work on loving each other and growing in knowledge and wisdom. Maybe the whole point of books like Rabbi Krishner's is to come to appreciate the miracles that are, the connections that are, the meaning that is, without tossing out the baby with the bathwater because it's not a perfect universe. I'd still like it to be perfect. I'd take that in a heartbeat, but that's not one of my options. I'd like to close tonight with a quote from Rabbi Krishner that says it better than I ever could. Are you capable of forgiving and accepting in love a world which has disappointed you by not being perfect? A world in which there is so much unfairness and cruelty, disease and crime, earthquake and accident? Can you forgive its imperfections and love it because it is capable of containing great beauty and goodness, and because it is the only world we have? Are you capable of forgiving and loving the people around you, even if they have hurt you and let you down by not being perfect? Can you forgive them and love them because there aren't any perfect people around, and because the penalty for not being able to love imperfect people is condemning oneself to loneliness? Are you capable of forgiving and loving God, even when you have found out that He is not perfect, even when He has let you down and disappointed you by permitting bad luck and sickness and cruelty in His world, and permitting some of those things to happen to you? Can you learn to love and forgive Him despite His limitations, as you once learned to forgive and love your parents, even though they were not as wise, as strong, or as perfect as you needed them to be? And if you can do these things, will you be able to recognize that the ability to forgive and the ability to love are the weapons that God has given us to enable us to live fully, bravely, and meaningfully in this less than perfect world? He finishes by saying, I think of Aaron and all that his life taught me, and I realize how much I have lost and how much I have gained. Yesterday seems less painful, and I am not afraid of tomorrow. Thank you for giving me this time.